Now, it was an extraordinary weekend on the international front because at one stage it looked like Russia was heading for a full-blown civil war as a column of Wagner mercenaries were marching on their way and driving on their way to Moscow. No one knew what was going to happen. No one knew what was going to go on. And no one knows really now what is going to happen there in terms of the authority of Vladimir Putin to run Russia in the middle of trying to prosecute a war in Ukraine. With me on the line to talk about this in more detail is Donico Bohacan, who is Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government, Dublin City University, where he lectures on post-Soviet politics, unrecognised state, Irish studies and foreign policy. Donico, good morning to you. This was astonishing stuff. There had been, you know, arguments and discussions about the Wagner Group and their place within the Russian military, but this weekend was just astonishing. At one stage, it looked very, very serious, and then all of a sudden, it all just collapsed. Where are we now on this Monday morning in relation to all of this?
Good morning, Jerry. It's very difficult to say where we are. It's very difficult to understand fully, even those very close to it would say this, fully what happened. And where we go to, well, that also is very much open-ended. But what is clear is that Russia faced its most serious threat to its sovereignty, well, according to Vladimir Putin, since 1917, when the Bolsheviks took advantage of the fact, of course, of an unsuccessful war, that was World War One, and overthrew the Tsar. And, of course, Putin himself considers himself to be a Tsar of sorts, certainly hankers after the Russian Empire and the glories, indeed, of the Soviet Union. So, you know, this was a big threat to his rule. And certainly Russians today, as they have their afternoon lunch, they're a few hours ahead of us, are going to be contemplating on what happened, the significance of what happened. And I think what they take away from this is that for the first time on Saturday, we could finally see a Russia without Putin. I mean, he's been there at the helm now for almost a quarter century. He seemed, certainly by his own rhetoric, to be invulnerable, impregnable. You might remember that what he said on Saturday, he said that this rebellion would be crushed. The treatment of those rebelling would be very harsh, that Prigozhin was a traitor. And by the end of Saturday, a very different Putin, who, by the way, doesn't make a public statement, hasn't made a public statement, he simply disappears. And Prigozhin is the one who seemed to have the initiative. He's the one who calls it off. So to many people, it seems like he could have taken Moscow, but decided not to take Moscow. And rather than being eliminated by Putin, he's allowed to live in Belarus. The Wagner Group are given an amnesty. And what many people take away from this, because of course Ukrainians are looking at this with great interest, and what Ukrainians have been saying all along is that, you know, Putin is very strong on rhetoric and he has a lot of red lines. But ultimately he responds, it's kind of the argument of the bully or even the mafia state. He responds to weakness and strength. So when he perceives weakness, he attacks. And of course, he considered Ukraine to be much weaker. His plan was, of course, to take over Ukraine in just a few days. And of course, he's invaded other neighboring countries on the same kind of understanding. But when presented with overwhelming strength or a real threat, military threat, he backs down. And that's, of course, what he did on Saturday.
Yeah, and he did back down at one stage, reportedly fleeing Moscow for St. Petersburg, which was his traditional base. There was some, and you mentioned mafia state there, Donica, there was some suggestion that one of the reasons why Wagner called off its assault is that the Russian Secret Service had got access to the families of the leadership of Prigozhin and others and threatened to eliminate them if they went any further. Is that really what's going on here? That sort of murky tactics?
Well, it's as plausible a theory as any other to explain what happened. I mean, these are all extraordinary wealthy people. Prigozhin, Putin, Shoigu. I mean, these are people who have divided up Russia, which is extraordinarily rich in terms of resources. They've divided up the spoils themselves and have a vested interest in the status quo. And the biggest threat, of course, to Putin's rule is some intra-factional fighting. I mean, that's how the Soviet Union collapsed, when you think about it. It was Boris Yeltsin versus Gorbachev, and Yeltsin pulled the plug under the Soviet Union and created a new Russian Federation, and that was why it ended. So, you know, Russia has a very passive population politically, not least because they've had long centuries of authoritarian rule. And therefore, you're not going to find, at least I would argue you shouldn't expect a popular uprising against Putin. If Putin is going to be taken out, as it were, it's going to be from within his own circle. That's certainly been the element of Russian history. And if you look what happened during this weekend, wasn't it remarkable how this Wagner group took over the city of Rostov? It's one of the top 10 cities in terms of population in Russia, more than a million people, without firing a shot. They took over the military headquarters, the southern military command. They marched 800 kilometers in a single day, and nobody stopped them. There was no mass demonstration saying, we support Putin, don't overthrow the regime. The public, like the military, were actually more or less stepping aside and saying, let's see how this pans out. And whoever wins, we'll back them. But they didn't have any skin in the game as far as they were concerned. And that, I think, will cause Putin a lot of concern.
Yeah. Is it astonishing that despite the fact that there was a number of military helicopters shot down in that advance, a number of Russian soldiers killed, that there are no consequences? Is that really how weak Putin is now, that it looks like there's no consequences for anyone involved?
That's it. And it shows you, of course, the telephone justice that exists and has always existed in Russia, you know, because, of course, if you have an independent judiciary, they would investigate crimes. And this is a crime, killing soldiers and things like that. When you're a private military operator, and that would be a matter for the judiciary. But a phone call from Putin is enough to dispense with any justice. I mean, justice is only used by the regime to persecute opponents. It's not there, bring justice in the abstract sense. So, yes, it will be seen for what it was, that, you know, Putin didn't have the power to crush somebody who defied him. And in fact, Prigozhin's continued existence is almost a mockery of Putin's rule now in Russia, because he defied Putin without consequences. And, you know, Putin as a dictator relies on the perception that he is a monopoly of violence, that he's a strong man. That image has been very much punctured now over the last few days.
He's got an army, some units of which, or many units of which, just simply stepped aside on Saturday.
Well, that's it. And you know, that in itself is the main source of concern, because Putin has state power. But as I said, it's based on control of resources. And, you know, Russia has always been thus. It's long period of authoritarian rule punctured by brief periods of chaos when a new form of authoritarian rule emerges. And that's what we actually thought we were seeing on Saturday.
Yeah.
As it happened in 1917, as it happened in 1991, that Russia was giving way to some new form of authoritarian strongman. Now, it didn't happen then, but what it did reveal is that, you know, there is an apex of power. Putin is at the very top. You take out Putin, you can place somebody else there, they have complete control over the state. The state power is not diversified. It's really positioned in one person. And in that sense, it's almost like an absolute monarch of old.
With that in mind, how worried were the Western powers, do you think, on Saturday as this was unfolding, for the potential for chaos and instability in Russia with all its nuclear weapons, tactical and otherwise?
I mean, there wouldn't be, I think, huge concern from that perspective, because the people who are currently in control have openly threatened to use nuclear weapons, when red lines have, been crossed and haven't. What would replace Putin, there's no argument that it would be better or worse. We simply don't know, because dictators don't allow, you know, deputies or vice presidents to emerge. Nobody knows who is number two or number three in Russia, because if you allow a number two or number three to emerge, then you worry that they may entertain ambitions of one day being number one. So, you know, there was obviously a close eye, and Western intelligence agencies knew this was going to happen, because one thing is for sure, this wasn't an overnight operation. You know, Prigozhin didn't get it into his mind to do this during the weekend. He's been planning this for a long time. Intelligence agencies knew about this. And you have to ask yourself, what was Putin's intelligence agency doing that they missed this? Huge threat to the state.
Finally, Donika, look, how does this, you know, if in fact it does, how does it colour the debate we're having now about our neutrality, and particularly the Russian say over where our troops go under the triple lock system?
Well, yeah, I'm actually going to Dublin Castle later today to part of the audience there to listen to what the debates are going to be about this very issue. I mean, the triple lock is a controversial issue, because it allows the five security members, the permanent members of the Security Council, to have a veto on Irish sovereignty. And, you know, there is a question, if you are a believer in Irish sovereignty and Irish independence, that any decision on how to use Irish defence forces, weak as they are, be they internally or abroad, should be a matter exclusively for an Irish government. It shouldn't be a matter that another foreign power has a veto over. So I think that's the point that the government have been putting forward. It is a contentious one. It is one that will be thrashed out. And yes, what has happened during the weekend has has only re-emphasized that we live in very uncertain times, and it's very important that whatever we decide, that we have a clear security policy on what our interests are and what our objectives are, what our strategies are, what our tactics are. And I think all are agreed, bar very few, that we need to invest more in our defensive infrastructure.
Yeah. Donika, does this change anything on the front lines in Ukraine, or is it too early to tell?
I think Ukrainians will certainly be heartened by what they have seen, because Russia has now been exposed as fragile, as vulnerable, and Russia's difficulty will be Ukraine's opportunity. So in the very short term, it's not going to make an amazing difference. But I think Russian soldiers or Russian troops were there for a variety of reasons. Many of them are conscripts, many of them are mercenaries. I think that they will also be disheartened by what they've seen in Russia. I mean, you have to imagine that when Putin went on the TV on Saturday, it was exactly 16 months to the day when he first addressed the Russian people about the invasion of Ukraine. And the whole invasion of Ukraine was about making Russia great again. It was about projecting Russian power. And here he was 16 months to the day later saying to Russians, Russia itself is under threat. That's going to dishearten a lot of people. And morale is very important in war. The Ukrainians have a lot of patriotism. They're defending their own country, their own communities, their friends, their families. Russian troops have a very different sense of motivation, and that morale will be, I think, punctured as a result of the events of the last weekend.
Yeah, certainly. Well, Donika, listen, we're going to leave it there. My thanks to you for talking to us on the programme this morning.